come and have your breakfast. The bread tastes almost as good as it did last night. I didn't want to leave you any, but Sam insisted.
Frodo sat down beside Sam and began to eat.
What is the plan for today?
Asked Pippin. To walk to Buckleby as quickly as possible, answered Frodo, and gave his attention to the food.
Do you think we shall see anything of those riders?
Asked Pippin cheerfully. Under the morning sun, the prospect of seeing a whole troop of them didn't seem very alarming to him. Yes, probably, said Frodo, not liking the reminder, but I hope to get across the river without their seeing us.
Did you find out anything about them from Gildor?
Not much, only hints and riddles, said Frodo evasively.
Did you ask about the sniffing?
We didn't discuss it, said Frodo with his mouth full.
You should have. I'm sure it's very important.
In that case, I'm sure Gildor would have refused to explain it, said Frodo sharply. And now leave me in peace for a bit. I don't want to answer a string of questions while I'm eating. I want to think.
Good heavens, said Pippin. At breakfast?
He walked away towards the edge of the green. From Frodo's mind, the bright morning, treacherously bright, he thought, had not banished the fear of pursuit, and he pondered the words of Gildor. The merry voice of Pippin came to him. He was running on the green turf and singing.
No, I could not, he said to himself. It is one thing to take my young friends walking over the Shire with me until we are hungry and weary and food and bed are sweet. To take them into exile, where hunger and weariness may have no cure, is quite another, even if they are willing to come.
The inheritance is mine alone. I don't think I ought even to take Sam. He looked at Sam Gamgee and discovered that Sam was watching him.
Well, Sam, he said, what about it?
I'm leaving the Shire as soon as ever I can. In fact, I've made up my mind now not even to wait a day at Crickhollow, if it can be helped.
Very good, sir.
You still mean to come with me?
I do.
It's going to be very dangerous, Sam. It's already dangerous. Most likely neither of us will come back.
If you don't come back, sir, then I shan't, that's certain, said Sam.
Don't you leave him, they said to me.
Leave him, I said. I never mean to. I'm going to stay with him if he climbs to the moon, and if any of those black riders try to stop him, they'll have Sam Gamgee to reckon with, I said. They laughed.
Who are they? And what are you talking about?
The elves, sir. We had some talk last night, and they seemed to know you were going away, so I didn't see the use of denying it.
Wonderful folk, elves, sir, wonderful.
They are, said Frodo. Do you like them still, now you have had a closer view?
They seem a bit above my likes and dislikes, so to speak, answered Sam slowly.
It don't seem to matter what I think about them. They are quite different from what I expected. So old and young, and so gay and sad, as it were.
Frodo looked at Sam, rather startled, half expecting to see some outward sign of the odd change that seemed to have come over him. It didn't sound like the voice of the old Sam Gamgee that he thought he knew, but it looked like the old Sam Gamgee sitting there, except that his face was unusually thoughtful.
Do you feel any need to leave the Shire now?
Now that your wish to see them has come true already, he asked.
Yes, sir.
I don't know how to say it, but after last night I feel different.
I seem to see ahead in a kind of way.
I know we're going to take a very long road into darkness, but I know I can't turn back. It isn't to see elves now, nor dragons, nor mountains that I want. I don't rightly know what I want. But I have something to do before the end, and it lies ahead, not in the Shire. I must see it through, sir, if you understand me.
I don't altogether, but I understand that Gandalf chose me a good companion. I'm content. We'll go together.
Frodo finished his breakfast in silence. Then, standing up, he looked over the land ahead and called to Pippin.
All ready to start? He said as Pippin ran up. We must be getting off at once. We slept late,
and there are a good many miles to go.
You slept late, you mean? Said Pippin.
I was up long before,
and we're only waiting for you to finish eating and thinking.
I've finished both now, and I'm going to make for Bucklebury Ferry as quickly as possible. I'm not going out of the way, back to the road we left last night. I'm going to cut straight across country from here.
Then you are going to fly, said Pippin.
You won't cut straight on foot anywhere in this country.
We can cut straighter than the road anyway, answered Frodo. The ferry is east from Woodhall, but the hard road curves away to the left. You can see a bend of it away north over there. It goes round the north end of the Marish, so as to strike the causeway from the bridge above Stock. But that is miles out of the way. We could save a quarter of the distance if we made a line for the ferry from where we stand.
Short cuts make long delays, argued Pippin. The country's rough round here, and there are bogs and all kinds of difficulties down in the Marish. I know the land in these parts, and if you are worrying about black riders, I can't see that it's any worse meeting them on a road than in a wood or a field.
It's less easy to find people in the woods and fields, answered Frodo. And if you are supposed to be on the road, there's some chance that you will be looked for on the road and not off it.
All right, said Pippin. I'll follow you into every bog and ditch, but it's hard. I'd counted on passing the Golden Perch at Stock before sundown. The best beer in the East Farthing, or used to be. It's a long time since I tasted it.
That settles it, said Frodo. Short cuts make delays, but inns make longer ones. At all costs we must keep you away from the Golden Perch. We want to get to Bucklebury before dark. What do you say, Sam?
I'll go along with you, Mr. Frodo, said Sam, in spite of private misgiving and a deep regret for the best beer in the East Farthing.
Then if we're going to toil through bog and briar, let's go now, said Pippin.
It was already nearly as hot as it had been the day before, but clouds were beginning to come up from the west. It looked likely to turn to rain. The hobbits scrambled down a steep green bank and plunged into the thick trees below. Their course had been chosen to leave Woodhall to their left, and to cut slanting through the woods that clustered along the eastern side of the hill until they reached the flats beyond. Then they could make straight for the ferry over country that was open, except for a few ditches and fences. Frodo reckoned they had 18 miles to go in a straight line. He soon found that the thicket was closer and more tangled than it had appeared. There were no paths in the undergrowth, and they didn't get on very fast. When they had struggled to the bottom of the bank, they found a stream running down from the hills behind in a deeply dug bed with steep, slippery sides overhung with brambles. Most inconveniently, it cut across the line they had chosen. They couldn't jump over it, nor indeed get across it at all without getting wet, scratched, and muddy. They halted, wondering what to do.
First check, said Pippin, smiling grimly.
Sam Gamgee looked back. Through an opening in the trees he caught a glimpse of the top of the green bank from which they had climbed down.
Look,
he said, clutching Frodo by the arm. They all looked, and on the edge, high above them, they saw against the sky a horse standing. Beside it stooped a black figure. They at once gave up any idea of going back. Frodo led the way and plunged quickly into the thick bushes beside the stream. Whew, he said to Pippin, we were both right. The short cut has gone crooked already, but we got under cover only just in time. You've got sharp ears, Sam. Can you hear anything coming? They stood still, almost holding their breath as they listened, but there was no sound of pursuit.
I don't fancy he would try bringing his horse down that bank, said Sam, but I guess he knows we came down it. We'd better be going on.
Going on was not altogether easy. They had packs to carry, and the bushes and brambles were reluctant to let them through. They were cut off from the wind by the ridge behind, and the air was still and stuffy. When they forced their way at last into more open ground, they were hot and tired and very scratched, and they were also no longer certain of the direction in which they were going. The banks of the stream sank as it reached the levels and became broader and shallower, wandering off towards the marish and the river.
"Why? This is the Stockbrook," said Pippin.
"If we are going to try and get back onto our course, we must cross at once and bear right." They waded the stream and hurried over a wide open space, rush-grown and treeless, on the further side. Beyond that they came again to a belt of trees, tall oaks for the most part, with here and there an elm tree or an ash. The ground was fairly level, and there was little undergrowth, but the trees were too close for them to see far ahead. The leaves blew upwards in sudden gusts of wind, and spots of rain began to fall from the overcast sky. Then the wind died away, and the rain came streaming down. They trudged along as fast as they could, over patches of grass and through thick drifts of old leaves, and all about them the rain pattered and trickled. They didn't talk, but kept glancing back and from side to side. After half an hour, Pippin said, "I hope we haven't turned too much toward the south and are not walking longwise through this wood. It's not a very broad belt. I should have said no more than a mile at the widest, and we ought to have been through it by now."
"It's no good our starting to go in zigzags," said Frodo. "That won't mend matters. Let's keep on as we're going. I'm not sure that I want to come out into the open yet."
They went on for perhaps another couple of miles. Then the sun gleamed out of ragged clouds again, and the rain lessened. It was now past midday, and they felt it was high time for lunch. They halted under an elm tree. Its leaves, though fast turning yellow, were still thick, and the ground at its feet was fairly dry and sheltered. When they came to make their meal, they found that the elves had filled their bottles with a clear drink, pale golden in colour. It had the scent of a honey made of many flowers, and was wonderfully refreshing. Very soon they were laughing and snapping their fingers at rain and at black riders. The last few miles, they felt, would soon be behind them. Frodo propped his back against the tree trunk and closed his eyes. Sam and Pippin sat near, and they began to hum and then to sing softly.
"Ho, ho, ho, to the bottle I go, to heal my heart and drown my woe. Rain may fall and wind may blow, and many miles be still to go. But under a tall tree I will lie, and let the clouds go sailing by."
"Ho, ho, ho," they began again louder. They stopped short suddenly. Frodo sprang to his feet. A long-drawn wail came down the wind, like the cry of some evil and lonely creature. It rose and fell, and ended on a high, piercing note. Even as they sat and stood, as if suddenly frozen, it was answered by another cry, fainter and further off, but no less chilling to the blood. There was then a silence, broken only by the sound of the wind in the leaves.
"And what do you think that was?"
Pippin asked at last, trying to speak lightly, but quavering a little.
"If it was a bird, it was one that I've never heard in the Shire before."
"It was not bird or beast," said Frodo. "It was a call, or a signal. There were words in that cry, though I could not catch them. But no hobbit has such a voice." No more was said about it. They were all thinking of the riders, but no one spoke of them. They were now reluctant either to stay or go on, but sooner or later they had got to get across the open country to the ferry, and it was best to go sooner and in daylight. In a few moments they had shouldered their packs again and were off.